Well, it's Thursday morning, February 11th. Been a little bit of a delay on updates. I thought I'd have a little bit more information, but it doesn't look like it's heavy. Forthcoming, most of the news and updates really are centering on variants, in particular, the large increase in the UK or B.1.1.7 variant in the United States, actually in Canada. And there's concern in both countries that the variant will end up replacing the circulating SARS-CoV-2 in both countries. And sometime next month, that will be the dominant strain. In association with that, Helix did do a preprint last week. And in the preprint, they essentially were showing that the frequency was starting to go up fairly dramatically, and that it was estimated that the level of B.1.1.7 would double every 10 days. The paper went through the end of January and showed that the frequency was getting in the neighborhood of 5% overall for the United States. But their website allows you to click on individual states and get the data for that state. And it goes through the first few days of February. And that data is even more alarming, indicating that in Florida, the percent positive, which is essentially taking the PCR results and asking how many of those positive PCR tests have evidence of what's been called S gene dropout or SGTF, which is S gene target failure. Both of those terms are describing the same result, and that is when using there's a commercial kit put out by Fisher, and I'm not sure if it's been modified. I know that Scripps is doing a modification to get even more specificity. But even the earlier version, essentially that would test three different regions. And of those three tests, two would be strong positives for the ORF1AB and N genes. And the S gene would be negative. And that's because the primer that's used for the S gene test is impacted by the deletion at positions, amino acid positions 69 and 70. And there's no sequence for the primer to bind to in the deletion samples. And therefore, you get this dropout. Instead of having three positives, you only get two. The one that's negative is for the S gene. And Helix has confirmed by sequencing, full sequencing of those that have that pattern, that for California and Florida, something like 80 to 100% of those samples do end up being positive for the UK variant or the 1117 or 117, I should say. And so the assay is fairly reliable. There's this consortium, I think that Illumina is actually doing the clinical testing, and Helix is actually doing the sequencing of the positive, the ones that have the S gene dropout. They have an agreement with the CDC that was signed in January, and I think it's basically the CDC provides the funding, and they get the results. Helix gets the results and gives it to the CDC. They get uploaded to GSAID and GeneBank as CDC samples, so they've got CDC numbering. And unfortunately, they don't have a whole lot of geographical data. The CDC just says what state they're in. They don't give the county or other indications on exactly where in the state the samples are located. And that's exacerbated by the fact that they do list what the initial lab is. And for these, the initial lab is Helix. And unfortunately, it's centralized. So all of the samples are actually sent to San Diego. And San Diego is the site of the Helix lab, as well as the Illumina complex, as well as Scripps Research. All three entities are within a 1 or 2 mile radius of each other. And so there's very little data to actually place these on the map. I mean, it's clear that Scripps is focused on San Diego County. They've got a few samples they've got themselves from local hospitals. And so it's pretty clear that those cases are from San Diego County. When they first started with the positives, there was a fair amount of media coverage, and they did confirm that the samples by Helix and Scripps were in San Diego County. They gave locations in San Diego County where the patients were living at the time, and they pretty well blanketed San Diego County, and that's where the vast majority of the samples for California are that are positive by Helix. Helix is the source for most of the variants in the United States. They have identified a high percentage of the California cases as well as the Florida cases. Florida and California are the top two, and Florida has taken the lead. So part of the reason I delayed this update was to try to get a little more information from Florida. Unfortunately, Florida is not that forthcoming on locations. They don't really give any information on their website. The local media have used the Public Records Act to get them to divulge the county that the cases are in. And so they put out a couple lists of the counties. The counties with the most are Broward and Miami-Dade, and a pretty good amount from Palm Beach County. They also have some of the Naples area, the three counties that feed in to Naples, which is where the Super Bowl was, and the celebrations there without masks were probably super spreading event for the Super Bowl. And there will probably be a big increase in the not too distant future as a result of that. There already is a big increase, and the reason I delayed this was there was a big jump on Tuesday. The CDC has a variant map that they now update on Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. The Tuesday update took Florida up to 343 positives, all of which were 117. And I was hoping to find out where they were. That was about 160 or so higher than the Sunday total, which is just 2 days earlier. And so there's a big explosion in cases. I was hoping that the media would be able to find out where these are, and as of this morning, the media appears to be unsuccessful with getting that information from the Florida Department of Health. And so there is no update as to where these cases are. The Helix data from the prior update were released last night. And as I indicated, they don't really give any geographical information, but they do have the age and gender. And these are mostly under 65, but mostly older than college students. So there are a lot of cases in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and early 60s. But the locations can't really correlate the actual sequence with what was assigned location-wise, because there's no linkage between those two data points. And I assume today there'll be another update by the CDC. It's Thursday, and they usually do those updates at night, around the 7 o'clock is what they claim on the website. They don't always make that deadline, but they do pretty much make the day, especially since they've changed it. It used to be Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. But anyway, there'll probably be an update tonight. And we'll see whether there's another 160 or something new cases, which would bring the total up to 500 for Florida alone. I kind of spent much of the day yesterday trying to figure out where these cases are. The biggest clue, which is for some of the cases, has to do with the University of, let's see, it's the University of Miami. And they have a serious outbreak there. They've locked down the school for 10 days. They've put out notices that students will have to be tested and be negative for their ID card to work for accessing buildings. So essentially, if they don't get tested and are negative, they won't be able to get around campus. They did acknowledge that the variant is present on campus, although it sounds like much of the spread wasn't really on campus. It was at social events in the surrounding neighborhood. So there's probably a concentration of cases there. The exact number isn't clear. I initially was assuming there'd be at least 10 and started to map them and then figure, well, maybe I'll get a little more information. I don't have any more information. I did map a few of them. And I suspect that a significant number, probably double digits of cases are associated with this outbreak at the University of Miami. There appears to be another outbreak at the University of Florida. The size of that outbreak isn't clear. These are based on media reports, whereas Miami was actually putting out statements from the president on how serious the situation was and why he imposed the lockdown. But the bottom line is that the frequency for Florida is now in double digits. The early data for this month showed the number getting as high as 13 or 14% of the samples tested. You can kind of do the math. If it's 13% is doubling every 10 days, for the end of the month, it'll be the neighborhood of 25%, and then a little over a week into next month, it'll be a 50%, and then sometime next month, they will be approaching 100%. And the numbers are going down for Florida as well as many places across the country, and that is kind of when the variants take over, that they have a selective advantage. And so the virus has been circulating, starts to decline, and the variant starts to go up. That's essentially what happened in the UK. And it looks like the similar problems are in Canada. Just a couple updates. The one long-term care facility in Barrie had 129 residents, and the attack rate was actually at 100%. All 129 residents were either PCR confirmed or died with symptoms before they were able to be tested. There were a few that were put in the probable category. But the confirmed or probables total 129 out of 129. And the death toll was quite alarming that the last count was that 69 of the 129 had died. So more died than survived. 69 versus 60. And there are additional outbreaks at other long-term care facilities or mental health facilities in Ontario. But the problem isn't limited to Ontario. There's a large number of cases in a little bit further to the west. I've started to map those, and I think they were at 71, and then they went to, I think, 96 or something. And then last night there was a another big outbreak in Montreal, and there's 30 something that are either confirmed by sequencing or positive by a test for by N501Y. The bottom line is that the variants are widespread in Canada, and they have been doing a lot of testing of travelers and not really doing a lot of testing for community spread. Now that they're starting to look at community spread, they're finding the virus in very high levels. So I would assume that Canada is probably on the same track as the US as far as the B117 to be dominant by next month. And then there's still similar outbreaks in Europe and countries, especially those that are closer to the UK. And those numbers are going up. I'm not getting them all on the map now. They're in the TMTC category, which is too many to count, or at least too many to go ahead and put on the map. These countries are doing hundreds of cases a day, sequences a day that are coming out. And it's pretty clear that the variants are essentially taking over. Southern Africa seems to be covered with the South African variant. It's not just in South Africa, it's in countries to the north of them. It's getting to be high levels in Europe also. And they're following the same pattern in Europe where overall the numbers are down, but the numbers of variants are up, and that's essentially what happened in the UK, that the variant took advantage of the conditions that led to a decline overall, but it was really part of a replacement by the variant, and then the variant became close to 100% of the samples, which is the situation in the UK. There's more data for the B117 picking up mutations at position 484. Those numbers are increasing and spreading. Last week, they crossed into Europe, and then last night or 2 nights ago, I guess they were in Taiwan, And so they got out into Asia. I mean, there's only one case, but it's that one actually was collected in December. So there's probably a lot more than one. They just haven't been releasing sequences from these additional cases. So that raises concerns about the vaccine. The vaccine is impacted by changes at 484, as evidenced by lower positive immunizations for those that have been infected previously. There's subsequent infections now. There's data on convalescent Anazara and antibody depletion, all of which shows that the changing position 484 leads to immunological escape. The number of different changes is growing, so it seems that this is a favorite target, both for the host to generate an immune response as well as for the virus to change it, so the immune response is no longer active. That's part of the reason in the U.S. They are supporting Moderna and Pfizer vaccinations to get the second shot, so there's a high enough titer so that that provides a cushion so that when the variant has lower activity, is still high enough to either prevent infection or to prevent more serious disease. But the fact that it's lower for B.1.1.7 is a good indication that there will be changes that continue to act on those numbers. One of the sequences that just came out last night in Florida actually has the three deletions in the spike gene that's normally associated with B.1.1.7, but they've actually picked up two of the three deletions that are also associated with the South African or B.1.351. So they actually have five deletions in the S gene. Something similar was seen in the UK, where it actually had all six of them, had the three that are with B.1.1.7 as well as the three with B.1.351. And so the virus continues to evolve. It evolves away from the vaccine. Moderna and Pfizer are basically working on a booster, which I believe is targeting the South African version. So there'll be some immunity targeting the change at position 484, although, like I said, the virus is changing that same position to multiple different amino acids, and whether they will escape the ones that target the K. The most common one is changing the E to a K, but there's also examples of changing it to an A, which escapes the Regeneron monoclonal, and changing it to a Q and changing it to a G. And all of those have been identified in the UK relatively recently. K is still the most common, but the others are showing up with increasing frequency.